Welcome to Comics,
episode 209. This week, we talk about Andre the Giant, Life and Legend. Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast review.
Do these things.
Did you, like, not watch?
No, I've never seen a professional wrestling match in my life.
Really?
Really.
You've never watched any professional wrestling match?
Oh, I've seen plenty of Lucha Libre.
Dude, it's...
Psychosis is a badass.
It's something special, man. It's... I can understand why people love it so much. So, Andre the Giant was... His heyday was, like, the 70s and 80s, right?
Yeah.
I didn't really watch wrestling then. I was aware of it, but I didn't know, like, where to go to watch it or anything.
Uh-huh.
But for some reason around, like, 2000, 2001, up until about 2006 or so, I was, like, in my late teens, early 20s, I would watch wrestling. Like, I would watch Monday Night Raw, after I got home from work. This is when I worked at Costco, so I would miss, like, the first hour or so, but I would always watch it, and I was really into it for that period of time, and then I just kind of stopped watching it. But the wrestlers from that era, I think that was like a really good time in professional wrestling for WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, like The Rock was around that time. It was
the
end of Stone Cold Steve Austin's career, I think, or well, I don't know what he's doing now, but he was around a little bit. My favorite wrestler, Chris Jericho, was around. As we were approaching the year, so in like 99, he was going by Y2J. And so there was like, there would be this countdown that would come on during the show, like during Raw, WWE Raw, or
yeah.
Monday Night Raw, I forget what it's called, Monday Night Raw. And it would do this countdown, and it would be mysterious, like people wouldn't know what it was. And then, eventually the countdown ended and it was revealed to be Chris Jericho. And then, you know, he's cool. I don't know. I just really like Chris Jericho. He's always been my favorite wrestler.
Yeah, I remember like trying to watch it when I was younger because all of my friends seemed to be into it a little bit,
mm-hmm.
or at least a lot of people were into it, and I tried, and I was just like, part of me was like, okay, this pageantry is getting really boring. I just saw Jen posters and
God damn it, Jen.
The other choice was Asian Mist.
Anyway,
Asian Mist, I think that one is, I think that's Tajiri. Tajiri is a Japanese wrestler, and he has a move where he sprays, like, this green stuff. It's, like, in his hand, and...
Is he a mist weaver?
Well, he's like... He's kind of like this, he doesn't really talk, and he's kind of like this mysterious guy. I think he was called like the Japanese Buzzsaw or something, I forget. And he would like spit this green mist in people's face. He would have this stuff in his mouth, and he would spit it on his opponent in their face, and they would have this green stuff on their face, and they would like be blinded.
Apparently, it comes in many colors. There's green, which blinds you, red, which will burn. Black, which will severely blind you. Blue, that sends you to sleep. And yellow, which will paralyze you.
Oh.
According to Wikipedia.
Why not just always use the yellow?
He also had this move called the tarantula, where he would, like... I think it was called the tarantula. He would, like tie people up in the ropes. It was, like, it was a hold. It was, like, a submission hold, but they were, like... they would have their back to him, and their arms would be over the top rope, and their legs would be over, like, coming up under the bottom rope, and then he would be like some, you know, like, it was like a rack type of thing. I don't know. There's something about, I think maybe you have to, I don't know what it is about, professional wrestling that, like, that I really like. I can't articulate it. Like, yeah. I haven't watched it in a long time, but there's something interesting about it. And you know, people always say it's like a lowbrow, like redneck thing. It really isn't. It's very, like, from reading this comic, you know, on the Andre the Giant biographical graphic novel, I think it's pretty clear that there's more to it than just people, like, I don't know. There's something more to it. It's a show, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. And that's the thing I think I didn't appreciate as much when I was younger. Cause for me, like, the pageantry, I never got into the wrestlers as characters or anything. So I was always just like, well, I might as well be reading a book. The story's better in a book. I'll just go read a book instead. And I had no interest in two guys just like, two sweaty, naked guys manhandling each other. I had no interest in that.
But like, see, the thing that ties it all together is the stuff that happens between the matches.
Yeah.
There's so much, like, drama and tension and stuff, and sometimes people are good guys, and then they'll turn, you know, they'll go from a face to a heel, and, like, you won't even see it coming. They'll just turn on their ally. And then the people, there's just such a wide variety of ridiculous characters.
Yes. You get some of that in the comic, too.
There was a tag team that I really enjoyed watching called the Dudley Boys. And they were brothers, air quotes. One of them was a black guy and the other one was a white guy. And they wore like Coke bottle glasses and overalls and like all this crazy stuff. But their thing was they had a move called the 3D. And they would set up a table, like a folding table in the middle of the ring, and they would slam people through tables. And then, like, there was like a spin-off of this. There was like something called a tables, ladders, and chairs match. So it's supposed to be like lions, tigers, and bears, except it's tables, ladders, and chairs. And so the ring has tables, ladders, and chairs in there, and people are allowed to use them in the match.
That's kind of amazing. I'm Googling these guys. Oh my god. Their glasses.
And they were like some of the most entertaining guys to watch. I seriously really enjoyed watching the Dudley Boys.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, it's weird, because I never got into WWE at all. Growing up in Central California, there's a huge, huge Mexican population in Central California. And, like, I would go to our local county fair, and there would be, the cow pageant and all that kind of stuff, and I had to go to the cow pageant, and then,
it's not the cow pageant.
It really is. My girlfriend in high school used to raise cows, but for the pageant, which is just like, it's just a bunch of hicks sitting around saying, yep, that's a fine-looking cow.
Is it like a dog show?
Yeah, it's basically a dog show, but for cows. That's exactly what it is.
Is there a magazine called Cow Fancy?
I would not be surprised. I did not get that much into the trade. But, so you did that, but then at night, there would either be a concert, you know, because there's county fair concerts, or there would be a Lucha Libre match at the county fair. So, in the daytime, I would go to the cow pageant, and then, you know, you do the rides in the afternoon, and then at night you go to the Lucha Libre. And Lucha Libre, I always thought was interesting because there's like just there's not pageantry like there is, I think, in WWE, but there's just bravado all over the place. Like, I don't know, it's similar, but it's so different because there's it's less of a show and it's more of like honor, like to have your mask taken or to be beaten by the heel. Like, it was just, I don't know. It's like comparing television like, drama to like a
date. A telenovela.
Yeah, it's comparing a telenovela to a soap opera. I mean, same genre, but they're drastically different, you know?
Huh. Interesting.
Did you ever, like, have any experience with wrestling?
When I was, like, 13, I had a couple friends who were, like, really into it, but I never watched much of it, like, on my own. And that's, like, the WWE type of stuff. Uh-huh. I have never seen a Lucha Libre fight, but I think that would be cool.
Oh, they're great. But, you know, David, you mentioned, like, how it's looked down upon. It really, really is. Like, where I work, we are having, so WrestleMania is coming to where we live, San Jose, later this month, actually, which is, like, the big event for the year, right, David?
It's usually, like the Super Bowl of the WWE. They have other, like, main events, like pay-per-view events, but WrestleMania is the big one.
Yeah, so during that same week when WrestleMania's in San Jose, in the building in which I work, which is like an event venue, we're probably going to be bringing in a smaller WWE event, like a...
promotion, they call it. It's a promotion.
Yeah, like a promotional kind of thing.
They're called wrestling promotions. Like, so the WWE is a wrestling promotion.
And later this year, we're also having Malala Yousafzai, who is a Nobel Peace Prize winner. So everybody in, we were in a big staff meeting, and everybody was cracking wise against wrestling. And like, oh yeah, wrestling, why don't we talk about some culture with Malala? And I was like, you know, wrestling might not be your culture, but it is, it's its own culture. It has its history, it has its own mythology, it has a whole lot going on for it that I think people just completely write off because they don't bother to get to that level of it. Let alone the level of did you guys read the first couple pages of this comic?
The intro?
Yeah. How he talks how it's just like, it's forbidden to talk about the business. Like, to say that it could possibly be fake. Like, you don't mention that. And I think a lot of people don't appreciate that. They just think, oh, well, you're just, oh, of course it's fake. It's all just show. And I mean, it is, but there's a whole other level of the people underneath these actors that you can't talk about, but you wonder about, but are their own motives and their own, like, there's a multi-layered thing going on here, and I can totally see how somebody could dig into professional wrestling.
Well, and then the thing, too, is, like, people always poo-poo it because they're like, you know it's fake, right? And it's like, if the fans do know that it's fake. It's choreographed. It's faked in that it's scripted, like any other movie, but you don't watch a movie and say, this is fake, I can't get into it, right?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, these guys... And ladies, because there's a lot of, there's women in
it too.
They really have to, like, work hard, like, physically. They're athletes, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's not.
Even if it's fake, you see some of these stunts. It takes a lot of physical conditioning to do a lot of this stuff.
Right. There's no stunt doubles, right?
No.
The people who are acting out as these characters are the ones that are also doing all this stuff, you know? And so, yeah, you know, they know when the other person's gonna, like, throw them or slam them and stuff, but, and they do stuff to mitigate the impact and the blows, but they're still, like, hitting the canvas and stuff, you know?
This week's comic.
So this week we read Andre the Giant, Life and Legend by Box Brown.
Yeah.
Which appeared on many a list of best graphic novels for 2014. So this was my choice for this round of, for this arc. And the reason I picked this is because I did, for a time, I was a big fan of professional wrestling. And, you know, even though I wasn't a fan, during Andre the Giant's heyday, he's such a cultural icon.
Oh, yeah.
Like, my strongest memory of him is from Princess Bride, where he's Fezzik, right?
Yeah. Same here.
And he's adorable in that. He's amazing.
Yeah, and so he's just like, you know, he's this huge guy, and he had this successful career, and it just seemed interesting to me. And we don't read, I don't know if we've ever read a biographical, comic.
We read those Blue Water comics.
Yeah.
Those don't count.
Those do not count.
I mean,
count.
I guess technically they are biographical, but...
Man. We've read some autobiographical stuff, but that's completely different.
Yeah, so I suppose what we read last week, you know, can we talk about something more? I already forgot the name. It's too long. The Roz Chast's comic.
I like that.
Can we talk about something more pleasant?
You had it, and they're like, "Ah, oh, it's too long. I forgot it already." I started it, and then I forgot it halfway through.
For some reason, when I was trying to say it the first time, I was going to say, "Can we talk about something more dependable?" And I was like, "That doesn't make any sense at all."
What up, Freud?
So yes, can we talk about something more pleasant by Roz Chast? That was definitely autobiographical. So this just seemed like an interesting thing because, you know, Andre the Giant, he's this really well-known figure in pop culture. Maybe not so much anymore to younger people, but certainly people of our age, right? I mean, yeah. You guys are familiar, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you had never seen him wrestle, you watched Princess Bride.
Oh, yeah. Dude, the day I found out my wife hadn't watched Princess Bride, we got up from the middle of what we were doing, we drove to Target, we bought it, and came back and watched it.
And that's
like, this is fundamental to childhood.
That's amazing. Like, that's like saying you haven't seen Star Wars. I mean, I know there are people out there who haven't, but it boggles my mind. It's my favorite movie. Like, far and away my favorite.
Yeah, it's totally it's a timeless classic. Like, I remember watching it as a kid when it was a new movie. And then I remember, and like watching it now, I have the same, I can enjoy it on different levels, but I still, enjoy the movie.
Yeah. Because
it's so well done, you know?
And that was actually one of my favorite scenes in this comic, is when he's watching the movie over and over and over. And I was just like, that's like, there's something kind of sweet and beautiful about that.
I feel like that's something that I would do if I was in a movie. I would just watch the movie over and over again.
Yeah.
But also, like, I think at that point in his life, I mean, at least as it's depicted in this comic, he's kind of just, he's in a situation where his life is this one thing, and it's kind of depressing. And, I mean, sure, he gets to do all these great things, but does he have friends? Not really. He doesn't have a whole lot of friends, per se. It's all just kind of work, and there's a lot of drinking. And then, like, this movie just seems like he can watch it and like, escape, you know? And, like, remembering what making the movie was like versus doing the wrestling, and I don't know.
Well, what was great about it is that, you know, how the whole experience of him making the movie was portrayed in this comic is that there were people, you know, he makes the point to say that people didn't stare at him in the movie set. Nobody, like, made a point to notice how he looked. And then people like Billy Crystal seemed to be genuinely friendly with him.
Yeah.
Like, they truly were a friend of his. Billy Crystal was his friend, even for a short amount of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, like, a really touching point in this comic.
Yeah, because his entire life, he was a spectacle. I mean, from the, even when he was in France, like, he was, like, the town spectacle. And then he just got bigger and bigger from there, and just, that's all that he was, is basically, I mean, I don't want to use the word freak show, because I don't want to call him freak, but that's kind of how he was treated, was, come look at this amazing behemoth of a man, and everybody looks at him. And then even when he wasn't in that position, like, just walking down the street, I love the way it's presented in this comic. He's just, like, walking down the street in places, or sitting in places, and it's not, like, overt all the time. But people are, like, looking at him from the corners of panels, just looking over constantly. And it's subtle. And a lot of, I mean, there's some places where you can tell Box Brown goes out of his way to show how he's being looked at by everyone, but there's a lot of panels where it's just, like, in the corner of the panel, there's just people staring at him. And it's,
yeah,
like,
and it's
pervasive.
What's interesting, too, is, like, that's his physical appearance is the reason for his success.
Mm-hmm.
At least the outset, right? And it turns... It still carries his success, but it turns into, like, a curse in some ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the stairs and things like that.
I mean, I think that's the big part of this comic, is that, like, there's two sides to Andre the Giant. You know, there's, and every, it seems like almost every part of the story has two sides to it, you know? Like, on the one hand, there's a story of him meeting the woman speaking French in Vegas, which was a nice, like, sweet little moment, I think. I mean, they were both drunk and whatever, but he was like, that's French, that reminds me of home. And then he leaves the hotel and is like, I'm going out to find that French woman, you know? And I mean, but the other side of that is then his relationship with his daughter afterward. And, like, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, you get a sense that he, like, outwardly was a really friendly guy. He liked playing cards and, you know, drinking with people. But, like, outside of that facade of friendliness, it seems like he was very alone.
Yeah.
You know, he talks about in the interviews, like, oh, I was always on the road, or, you know, I can't settle down right now, I'm on the road. And then, oh, for me, the most poignant scene was when he's on his ranch, and I think it was, like, North Carolina, and he's talking to the ranch hand working there. And the guy's like, oh, I wish I was like you, Andre. And Andre goes, no, I wish I was like you.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, you get this really strong sense that he's so alone. I don't know. It made me sad, but... Have you guys read anything else by Box Brown? Just
no.
Curious.
No, I have not.
So he did this webcomic called Belen. And it's basically about this dude who's alone. And he's, I think, in his 20s. And he meets a girl. Like, it's kind of just like a slice of life webcomic about life and love and all that stuff. And the same tone is prevalent there as it is here. So, like, having read that and seeing this, I see this, like, striking similarity where Brown seems to be writing a lot about, like, I don't know, just kind of loneliness in the sense that each person is kind of like an island unto themselves in some ways. But, you know, I haven't read, he's done a bunch of stuff and I haven't read any of his other things, unfortunately. So I don't know if that's, like, a thing in all his work or just happenstance, what I've read. But I don't know, like, the comparison, like, having read his other comic just made it seem way sadder in this one.
It just amplified what was already in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciated Box Brown's art style in this story, too, because it feels, his art style feels really simple and straightforward, which is also, like, I think the way that he wants to present this biography. Like, it's, he doesn't, there's not many text boxes with explanations of things. There's not him trying to take an angle, it doesn't seem. It seems like what we're given here is as simple and straightforward as it can be. And I think you want to do that because the reality is that Andre the Giant was an actual complex person. Just like everybody's a complex person. But he had, I think, different, more difficult complexities than a lot of us. And so I really appreciate this, like, the juxtaposition of the present, like, the narrative style and the art style is really simple and straightforward, but the subject matter is actually, like, complex and a real person, you know? It was a great presentation for this sort of story.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that the simplicity of the art kind of just let the character shine through. It wasn't about, you know, saying, look at how well I tell this story about Andre the Giant. It was more like, this is who this person was and what he did. And it's very unadorned. I also feel like, you know, like in the intro, Brown says, you know, I wasn't there. I don't know what happened, and there's not an account of everything, so I made some of it up. Mm-hmm. And I feel like...
The biographer's dilemma.
Yeah, exactly. But the simplicity helps with it, right? It's not like he's trying to draw all these details that weren't real. He's just setting up a scenario where you can fill in the blanks as the reader. You know, you don't need to know who was sitting where on the bus, and you don't need to know what this room looked like exactly to get, like, the basic sense of what's happening here.
So are there scenes in this where you guys felt, like, especially happy for or proud of Andre?
Well, I think I could, I certainly felt that way. I felt happy for him in the scene where he's filming the movie. I mean, we talked about that a little bit already, because it seems like he like I said, you know, like we mentioned before, he's genuinely happy in that scene, which was really nice, because a lot of the comic is not like that. But there are a few scenes where he's being helped by his colleagues in professional wrestling, and those are always really sweet, because, you know, like you said before, Andy, earlier in the podcast, there's layers and layers to professional wrestlers, right? And his interaction with a lot of his colleagues are really sweet because they show him a lot of respect. And he doesn't really get that from his quote unquote fans, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's like the woman where he, you know, the scene with the woman trying to get an autograph, and he's having a meal, and she flips out on him.
He's just trying to eat.
Yeah, and
who was it? I don't remember who the guy was, but he's like, come on, you paid, you watched the show, you enjoyed the show, you got something, you had a meal, it's fine, you got a good experience, now head on home, it's okay.
Yeah, it's like these people have an expectation. I think the woman even says, you know, because of the fees they pay to see the show, he gets paid. So it's like they owe him something else, right?
Yeah.
Paying isn't enough in him entertaining them. Yeah. So seeing this mutual respect amongst the wrestlers is really, it shows, you know, cause we talked about him, Andre the Giant, being alone, but he always had, there were always people he could turn to a degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was nice to see that kind of thing, because it's like those scenes of camaraderie kind of break up the sadness of this comic.
Yeah, yeah, and you definitely get a sense of the respect everybody had for him. Like, there's a scene when they're on the plane, and somebody says to him, like, you know, Andre, you call everybody boss, but everybody here knows that you are the boss. And it's the sense of not just, like, he's big and can call the shots, but, like, he's running professional wrestling at that point, more or less. Not like he's making the decisions for what direction pro wrestling's gonna go and all that, but, like, they're all getting better billing because of him. Like, he's running the show. But he doesn't see it that way, necessarily. I don't know. That was a really nice, interesting moment that I liked, but, like, not just the physicality of you're the boss, of course, but, like, right at that point in time when that guy said that, Andre was wrestling. But I gotta say, I think my favorite moment, is one of the few moments where Box Brown does narrate, when Hulk Hogan and Andre are fighting, and Andre has changed from being the face to the heel. And Andre wants to pass the belt on to Hulk. And just I really loved how before the fight, Hulk Hogan was like, I'm not throwing him nothing. I can't pick him up unless he wants me to. Like, that ain't gonna happen. And so the fight's going on, and Andre's working it. He's not letting Hulk just take it from him, you know? And then you get that panel where Hulk has picked Andre up, and you're like, that is the moment, you know? Like, the audience is going to see that the moment is when Hulk pins him or when Hulk gets the belt. That's what the audience is going to see. But that's when Hulk knows, and that's when Andre has given it up, is when Andre lets him pick him up. Like, that is the real moment when it's happened. Because up until then, I mean, Andre, let's face it, could just change his mind. Like Hulk said, if Andre doesn't want to get picked up, Andre gonna get picked up, and if Andre don't get picked up, then it ain't gonna end there.
That was actually, like, out of the wrestling scenes, that was my favorite one. Because the whole time, like, Andre's like, yeah, he deserves to be the champion now, and he just falls into playing the heel really well. And I don't know, it's just, like, this ability to take a crowd who has loved you for many years and let them see you as the heel. I think that is good sportsmanship, and it's good showmanship. Mm-hmm. And it really just highlights the fact that Andre, you know, he's dedicated to the art that is wrestling. And I say art because, yeah, it's fake, but, like, their job is to make it look real, and their job is to make it look entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he entertained the crowd really well. And he took it really seriously. Like, it was, you can tell this was something he really cared about, just, yeah, you know, being a good showman, so.
Which is probably also why he was extra anointed that mother and child. Like, it seems like all Andre wanted to do was make sure that people had a good time when they came to a show with him. Like, that's what he wanted to happen. He wanted them to get their money's worth. And for these people to come up and say that they didn't because they didn't get an autograph or shake his hand or something, it's like, are you kidding me? Did I do nothing out there in the ring for you? Did I just do nothing all day? Like, what? That's so insulting and horrible. Because that's his craft, that's his art, and he really, really cared about it and worked at it, you know?
Yeah, and you know what's kind of funny? It sounds like he drank a lot. I mean, of course, he had to drink a shit ton to get drunk.
What did the guy say, like, after a bottle of vodka, he'll start to feel something?
Yeah, he's, like, tingly, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I get, like, okay, you're bigger, you gotta drink a lot. That's fun. But he was, like, he liked to drink, and he liked get drunk. But it seemed, too, like he was pretty professional about it most of the time. Like, you see a couple scenes where he's, like, being a real douchebag. But... like, I really love how he'll get, like, trashed and then piss people off. And then when he sobers up later, he'll go and shake their hand and be like, are we friends now? Like, he just, I don't know, that shows respect to me. Like, even if you're drunk and you do something stupid or say something mean, like, the willingness to be like, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
And I think it shows something nice about his character.
I know, and I think he kind of did that in life in a lot of places, too. Like, what was the other wrestler's name, the black one?
Was it Bad...
Bad News Brown?
Bad News Brown.
I don't know. Whatever his name was, like, when they were on that bus together and Andre dropped the racial slur, and Bad News was like, are you fucking shitting me with this? And, like, rightfully so, whether or not he knows he's going to get his ass beat, he's like, come on, Andre, I'm going to at least punch you a little bit. Like, and you're going to deserve it for this, you know? And afterwards, Andre's like, yeah, we're cool. And Bad News is like, yeah, sure, whatever, we're cool. But then years later, Andre goes out of his way to say, that was wrong of me, and I'm sorry. Like, not just in the heat of the moment say I'm sorry, but, like, genuinely go back a long time afterwards and say, you know, I fucked up real bad right there, and I'm sorry about that. That was another one of my nice moments is when he did that. But, like, I think that's a huge part of his life, is making these bad decisions and then realizing that they were bad. But because he was so much larger than life, the bad decision seemed so much worse. I don't know. Like his being drunk in that one bar and not wanting to leave. If he were anybody else, the cops would have just taken him out, and it wouldn't have been a thing. It would have been just every other drunk wrestler. But because he's Andre the Giant, he comes off looking like a huge jackass of a bully. Like, I mean, he was no more indignant and stubborn in that moment than any other drunk man would have been. You know? But because of who he is, he can get away with it. So he comes off looking so much worse than everybody else would.
That's actually really true. It's just, it's not that he was being super douchey. It's that they couldn't do anything about it, and it made it look way worse.
And then there's a lot of moments like that in this comic, I think. Can't think of any right now, but I know that they're. But yeah, I have a whole newfound respect for Andre the Giant after this, and I do want to go back and watch some of his wrestling, because I've never seen any of his wrestling before, and I do want to go on YouTube and I'm going to look up that Andre the Giant Hulk Hogan fight.
Yeah, that's actually pretty spectacular. I that's one I have seen of his. I did watch it many years later. It wasn't when it was on.
Yeah. How old were you then? When did that happen, anyway? I feel like
It was in the late 80s.
Was it? Okay, that wouldn't have been too bad. A little bit violent for late 80s for my age. I don't think I would have gotten away with watching it.
Well, I mean, kids were...
It's gotta be on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, kids were watching... We're watching wrestling in the late 80s. I remember a Nickelodeon like after school special type of show thing where Hulk Hogan did a thing where he talked about his childhood because he was like apparently not he was kind of a hefty kid.
Oh yeah, I think he said I think I've heard him say that before.
And so. Yeah, that always stuck with me. I don't know why. Anyways, so yeah, it was actually March 29th, 1987.
Huh, there you go. Yeah, no, I would definitely have been too young.
So I would have been like... Yeah, I was a toddler, so...
But you know, even if we were like six... I was thinking, okay, even if I'm like six, it's a little bit violent, but then, fuck it, when I was six, I was watching the X-Men cartoon where Wolverine legit kills people. Like it ain't no thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if wrestling would have been too violent or not. I think it might have been better.
I mean, sometimes people accidentally get hurt in wrestling or they get beat up a little, but it's not like they're intending real harm to each other.
Right.
Like, I, despite all of the, you know, grabbing and throwing and wrestling, basically, I don't feel like it's a terribly violent sport. Because, well, people can get really injured, but I don't...
I don't even know if I want to call it a sport. I would say that wrestling is probably one of the world's oldest performance arts. Or, I mean, like, you think about, like, competitive swordplay, right? Just people doing it in the street for fun, you know? But before you had swords, I imagine there were probably people staging fights or doing kind of, like, wrestling things in ancient Greece for show. I bet that happened. I bet it did. I don't have any proof. I'll have to go look that up.
Well, I mean, the people, they're acting.
Yeah.
The wrestlers are all actors. It's just very physical, and the action, all the conflict is resolved through fights.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, think about, like, even Olympic wrestling, right? There were the original Olympics, Olympic wrestling, the very first Olympics. There has to have been a heel in the face. They might not have been acting, but you know there was the hometown crowd.
Sure.
Right? And you know they probably played up to it a little bit. Like, and it's, to a certain degree, that's performance art. I mean, it's a competitive sport, but there's something in showmanship, and there always has been. And I don't know. After reading this, I never used to get indignant about the culture of wrestling. I always didn't like it when people talk down on it just because it wasn't their culture. It wasn't something they were into, so people talk down to it. But after this, I'm like, yeah, this is just as legitimate a culture as anything else. This and Radiolab podcast, La Mancha Screwjob. I listened to that. That was a good episode.
Well, like, the thing is, it's just another the people who are into wrestling, it's just another fandom, right? I mean, it's just as legitimate as us sitting here talking about comics, right? Or Star Wars or anything.
Absolutely.
So people need to show some respect to wrestling fans, is what I'm trying to say.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're going to get...
And wrestling itself, right?
Yeah. They're going to get the concerto.
People talk about how, I mentioned earlier, like, it's a redneck thing, right? But remember, people used to talk about how, like, Star Wars or comics was just things that nerds were into, and now nerds are cool, right?
Yeah.
I'm still a little bit resentful that nerds are cool now. I've been one my I was a nerd before it was cool.
Hipster nerd.
Exactly.
Alright. Well, you guys wanna get down to rate this one? I mean, it's kinda weird. You can't talk too much about a biographical piece because you can't analyze a person's life. All you can do is analyze the presentation of it, and I guess I'll go first. I'm gonna give this a 5 just because I think Box Brown did an amazing job of biographical work here. like, the art fits, the way it's presented fits, and like I said, he hardly ever goes into narration in this, but when he does, it's like that Hogan-Andre fight, and it's great. Or like the, like when he's out there with the cane on that late night show. Or no, it wasn't a late night show. It was,
That was a wrestling, a wrestling show.
Yeah, it was a wrestling show, that's right. And like, you can, like, Box Brown has to tell you that it was obvious that he wasn't holding up. Because Andre would have never said a half a sentence to let you know that he wasn't holding up. Because he knew that even though he might not any longer be larger than life in body, he had to be it in image. And he knew that he had to maintain that for his fans, for the business. Like, he was so committed until the very end. In what he was as a wrestler and as a performer, that was paramount. And that's the only time Box Brown has to come in as a biographer, because he's done such a good job all throughout just presenting a man as he was, because the man alone is complex and real enough and an interesting enough story of his life that you don't have to do a whole lot of work. I don't know if that's the wrong way to say it. Box Brown did a whole lot of work, but you don't have to do a whole lot of dramatization of this guy's life. It was already pretty interesting, and Box Brown identified that and did a great job of making an awesome little comic. So yeah, 5. Which one wants to go next?
I'll go next. I'm also going to give it a 5, for many of the same reasons that Andy decided to. But one thing that I really appreciated about this comic, you know, like Andy said, it's hard. You can't rate somebody's life on a scale of 1 to 5 because it just is what it is. But I really liked the way Box Brown set the atmosphere for the comic. There's just like so much about, like, even there's just a sadness about the comic throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it's, there's this weight that you can't escape while you're reading it, and it just helped move the story along, and I don't know, I'm not sure what I'm trying to say, just that I appreciated that. And I really thought that was a very strong point in this comic, so yeah, I'm gonna give it a 5.
I think part of what you're looking for there, too, is pacing.
Yeah, you know, there's, you know, sometimes you read a biography and it goes into, like, minutia about somebody, and this one, it was really short. I mean, it's a comic, and it was like 100-something pages, right? 140 mm-hmm. or something. It's not that long for a biography, but I think all the important parts were conveyed.
Yeah.
I mean, well, not to say that other events in his life weren't important, but to get the point across that Box Brown is trying to. Everything is perfect. There's nothing extraneous, and I didn't feel like there's anything missing. So, 5. Yeah.
All right. Jen?
Also 5.
Woo!
I like Box Brown, and I think that his art was impeccable for this. Like, I think it told the story well. I think that his hands-off approach to the biography did it really well. I, of course, am no expert on Andre the Giant. Like, for all I know, I could have just been lied to for, like, what, 250 pages? But, you know, even if I was, it was a compelling story. It was told with a deft hand. In that, Brown obviously wanted to show us that Andre was a man who was, like, very kind, but also troubled in some ways. Like, it's really easy to mythologize him, I think, if not even for his wrestling career. Just, like, I've seen him in, like, what, 2 movies? And he's a presence.
Yeah.
You know, he has such personality, and he is very, like, physically, like, unique. So he's an individual who kind of, like, stands out, and you kind of, I don't know, I always, like, have a way I imagine him, right? He seems like this really nice, friendly guy, and I guess what I'm saying is it's easy to think things about Andre the Giant because he's so mythologized in pop culture. But I feel like this is not mythologizing him. It's more like we're just given the facts. And it's very eloquent. Yeah.
All right. Fives all around. Awesome. Good stuff. Yeah. Okay. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
All right. Let's do Fight Night.
Fight Night. Round one.
So this week we're going to do a double Fight Night. First one up, because we're coming to the end of the Fight Night series, and I've got some points to make up, so we're doing a double Fight Night, which means we're going to do them quick. First Fight Night is best wrestling move name. And I'm going to go first since I'm in last. I had this down to two, and instead of poetry in motion, I chose the concerto, which is a two-man move where the victim is standing and two people hit him with a chair on either side, kind of like a gong. I love it because it is a pun and it is an awesome move. It's just great. You smash him on either side of the head with two steel chairs. Wonderful. Concerto.
Round two.
So I'm going to go with Clash of the Titus, which is a move by the wrestler Titus O'Neil. I have no idea what it looks like. I just think that's an amazing... That's like... He just put his name in his own move.
And he punned it up.
Yeah.
So all right.
There you go. That was poorly argued, but there you go.
Round three.
So I was going to go with Asian Mist, but then I saw this. And it's the vaginal claw. Now, my explanation is going to lose this for me, because unfortunately, you are not grabbing someone else with your vagina. It's someone else grabbing your vagina, which is a lot less fun. So, there it is.
Oh, man. See, I had a better one that I could have done.
What would your better one have been?
Yeah.
So there's a character called Mick Foley, and he did a move called the Mandible Claw, which is basically where you stick your hand in the other person's mouth, and that's like a hole somehow.
The fuck?
And he had a character thing that he used to do where he would wear a sock puppet on his hand. There was literally a sock with a face drawn on it called Mr. Socko, and he would do the Mandible Claw on people with the sock puppet.
Ew.
That's disgusting.
And he would pull, so he wouldn't take the sock off his foot, he would pull it out of his sweatpants.
Ew!
Okay, no, David, stop there. David, I am going to pick you for Clash of the Titus, because for some reason I really like the WWE's naming conventions, and I really think it's adorable when two huge, super buff dudes get all punny with their own names. So Clash of the Titus gets my vote. Also because vaginal claw, I am a little disappointed that it's not grabbing somebody with your vagina.
Yeah, right?
That seems like that's what it should be. Have you guys seen the video going around of this woman like crushing a watermelon with her legs? It's freakish.
I have not
awesome.
Seen that.
No.
Anyway, yeah. My vote is for Clash of the Titans, mostly because vaginal claw is disappointing.
Yeah.
Yep. David?
I'm going to actually vote for Concerto because it's the awesome punniness of it.
All right.
All right.
All right, Jen?
It's got to be Concerto.
Yeah, I get
it's
a point.
Amazing.
Yeah, Concerto. Sweet.
Fight Night. Round one.
All right. That's that Fight Night. Done. Next Fight Night, right now. Not next week, right now. Fight Night, second bout. Princess Bride. What is the best Princess Bride quote?
Sonny, true love is the greatest thing in the world. Except for a nice MLT, a mutton, lettuce, and tomato sandwich, where the mutton is nice and lean and the tomato is ripe. They're so perky. I love that. Done. I delivered it very poorly compared to Billy Crystal, though.
Round two.
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Just over and over. Just do it in your head over and over. It's more terrifying and beautiful every time.
Round three.
So I'm going to go with a Fezzik quote.
Of course.
I just want you to feel you're doing well. I hate for people to die embarrassed.
All right, we're going to vote, and I'm going to pick David again. Because that's adorable.
I'm sorry, Andy. Yours is just, it's the obvious choice. I mean, it's a great quote.
So good.
It is good, but I'm going to go with Jen.
I should say Woo-hoo. It some more times to terrify you more. All right, Jen.
Okay, I love every quote from this movie, but I got to go with Andy, because it is the classic, although predictable.
All right, that's a three-way tie, right?
What?
That's a three-way tie, right?
Yeah.
I think it was.
Oh, so let's get the scores.
Jen, 6. David, 4. Andy, 4.
You know, I think I just called my wife a machine. Anyway, 4. Yeah, no. I'm 4. I'm only 2 behind Jen now. Yeah, and I caught up to David.
I'm going to step up my fight night game.
Ooh, yeah. Next week, we're going to wrap up our Best of 2014 series, finally. We've done 8 issues of Best of 2014. The 9th and final one is next week. We've gotten a quarter of the way into the year just doing Best of last year. That's how good comics are getting good these days, guys. So we're going to do Michael DeForge's Ant Colony. Mostly because every single year, I see Michael DeForge's name on these Best of lists, and I have no idea who Michael DeForge is and have read nothing of Michael DeForge. Which means that I am, like, I have lost my comic book snob card, I think. Ant Colony is next week by Michael DeForge. Till then, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Anybody want a peanut? I don't know where the southern, like, hick accent
peanut? Came in there.
Never be on the screen.
That's okay. Maybe you can make it in professional wrestling, Jen.
Maybe.
Hey, there you go.
A campiness would
serve. You could be a WWE diva.
You're finished.
Yes,
hey everybody, I just wanted to take a second at the end of this episode and let you all know that none of us were actually able to get our hands on a copy of Michael DeForge's Ant Colony. So instead, we're going to roll with one of our other picks for Best Graphic Novel of 2014, Brian Lee O'Malley's Seconds. O'Malley is the author-artist of the popular Scott Pilgrim series, so we figured we'd do a comic of his before we wrap up our Best of 2014 series. Thanks again for listening, and one more time, next week, it's Brian Lee O'Malley's Seconds. See you then.